Welcome to Real Estate Radio Live, an informative and engaging podcast discussing everything you need to know about the world of real estate. Your host, Joe Cacera, provides you with insight and guidance on how to buy, sell, finance, and invest in real estate. He also offers real estate tax management strategies, new construction advice, home improvement tips, and much, much more. And now, to guide you around the world of real estate, here's your host and Real Estate Radio Live team leader, Joe Cacera.
Welcome in, Joe Cacera with Real Estate Radio Live. Thank you for those that are continuing to follow us on Facebook. We appreciate that very much. Just as a reminder, we try to keep the show fairly consistent for those viewers on Facebook primarily. We do the shows Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays right around 3 o'clock or 3:30 Pacific Standard Time, so we appreciate that very much. Most of you know or may not know if you're just tuning in. Welcome, and thank you for watching the show, following the show for almost 8 years. We've done live radio and podcast. It seemed like a rodeo at times. And podcast. And as much as I love radio, Jack and I were talking about that over the weekend. I love live radio. Maybe one of these days I'll go back to it. But, you know, podcasting is so much more acceptable and easier to use for people, accommodating. You could do it while you're jogging, walking, riding, you know, relaxing. And you don't have to be at a certain time.
Well, the other
advantage, to do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, the other advantage is you really are just providing information and education. Radio has a certain marketing sales driver, and it turns
that is true. Yeah. Very good point. I mean, actually, about 40% of the time that one's listening to a radio show, it's some kind of advertising, marketing, something to their benefit instead of the consumers.
But it's even subtle because even in the show,
it's a good point.
They're doing stuff that's so overt, it doesn't really have the pro bono aspect of what you do because you pretty much say, hey, be on the lookout for this, and you're sort of identifying traps for the unwary. So, you know, I just listen sometimes when I come over. I occasionally listen to some of the AM channels.
Right.
And it's amazing to me that they get these speakers, A, I never think their voice is as good as yours or mine.
I would agree.
B, I never think the content is as good as what we do. And then C, the advertising is just so overt that it's like it's just a running ad. So I could see how you could kill an entire terrestrial radio channel. The entire AM channel is probably dying, is my guess.
Right. And I think, you know, Jack, you make kind of a good point. We don't want to get too far off this because we have a great topic today. But you know, we're talking about radio and podcasting, and that I think what happens, and I was in radio for 7 years, and I got a taste of it, and I understand how the advertising works. So here's how it goes. They don't necessarily get the most talented, qualified people. Mm-hmm. What they do is they get someone in that field that's willing to pay, if that makes sense.
Right.
Right?
So it becomes like a vanity radio.
Yeah, right.
It's
right.
Like, if you pay us enough money, we'll get you on the air.
Doesn't matter who you are, what kind of qualifications, your background, your results, your expertise.
Right.
If you just say you're an attorney or say you're an accountant or say you're an expert and you're willing to pay X amount of dollars, right?
Well, I occasionally have even listened to other attorney shows because I'm interested in seeing how they do it. And every once in a while, I am stunned that an attorney will take an on-the-air question, a live question, and do a pretty good job spontaneously.
Yeah.
And I say, well, that's worth listening to because how people roll with the punches.
Yeah.
Because occasionally you'll get kind of the heckler-style question.
Right.
I'm sure you had to screen some of those out. But, you know, like I had something like this recently where someone said, you know, how do you ethically become a billionaire? Like just unpack
ethically?
That. Ethically, because they were like, don't you have to push the rules of the game and the envelope just to get to a B? You know, my mom likes to say, I could have been a billionaire if I had all that property out in, you know, eastern Long Island. Well, she probably wouldn't have become a billionaire in the true capital B sense. She likes to think that way. Sorry, Mom. But in general, conceptually, the rules of the game, the tax system, the expense of operations, like all of the issues that are normal capitalism at work, it really screens out the potential of accumulation for most people on Earth. Most people, let's just even take the U.S., you know, let's say the entire world is 10 billion people. Well, we know that 90% of those people will never really even become millionaires.
Right.
So just focus on the U.S. and say, okay, in the U.S., we have 300 million people, maybe 100 million actually are doing something productive with their time. The rest of the people are doing goofy stuff or retired.
I think I heard there's around 10 million millionaires. Does that make that?
Yeah,
that
sounds right, but think about billionaires.
Yeah, billionaires, there's, I think they said 1,000.
Yeah, it's probably, it's a tiny number, but
yeah.
If you could interview those 1,000 people and say, did you ethically accumulate retain and reinvest, and how did you do it?
Yeah.
How are you capable of doing it? I mean, you can go through some stories. Well, yeah, I had a lot of failures, you know, a lot of stuff, a lot of bankruptcies, a lot of high-risk situations. And there are just great stories like, hey, you know, I started a company and it became this multi-billion dollar successful IPO.
Yeah.
And now it's like the Netflix book that you politely gave to me this weekend that I read quite quickly. It's kind of a great book. You should have that author come in. He's from Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I should. It's a good point.
It's a good book. I mean, it's a good story. It should have come out, in my mind, probably
sooner,
5 years.
Right? Yeah.
Because Netflix has kind of arguably gotten to more of like the pinnacle, and now the question are they on the way down? Now, I think they have some great shows, and they certainly deliver very effectively. So the question is, can they maintain it against a world where there's lots of competition?
Well, now they're in the production business.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Content was first.
Yes.
Production is next.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the analogy I like to use is, their valuation is greater than Sony, and Sony did the entire vertical integration from the creation of studios to the creation of the players to the TV itself.
Yeah.
I mean, here's
That's
Sony.
That's amazing,
This, you know, they had the Walkman before anyone even thought of it. I mean, they were ahead of their times on a portable electronics. They still have one of the best, if not the best, picture TV.
They do.
I mean, we saw Sony TV recently. We're like, wow, that screen is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But the stock has been relatively stagnant. Yeah. And if you look at their enterprise valuation, it's a fraction of what these bigger guys, like Netflix. Netflix is not a Sony. But Netflix is worth three times Sony. It's
a great example, Jack. It's kind of the same example as Tesla versus Ford.
Yeah, Ford Motor Company, another good example. And they're getting ripped apart because there's this video where the Tesla truck is pulling the F-150 and it's just, you know, in a tug of war, it's winning. And if you're Ford, I think they had the CEO of Ford on Bloomberg or on CNBC this morning, and he was like, yeah, that's totally rigged. We're going to, like, prove that that's rigged. We're going to completely show that our truck can do better.
I'll tell you, say what you want to say and all this goofy stuff that people want to find negative. I get it, but I love Elon Musk.
Yes.
I know he's crazy, a little bit out of there, a little bit this, a little bit that.
Yes.
But those people are amazing to me.
They're the change makers.
Yeah.
They're the be different ad that Apple ran about a decade ago.
Right.
Now it's been a while. That the change makers, the Da Vincis, the folks that just see something that, you know, some people like to say maybe they're from another planet.
Mm.
Maybe they just land here and they don't tell you that they're from another planet and they can do stuff that you'd be amazed and the world then changes for the better in a mega way.
Good
Those
stuff.
People don't necessarily all become billionaires.
No,
that's the other
that's
thing.
True.
I mean, as much
that
as
is
you
true
say,
too.
You
that's
know,
a good here, point.
Here are these brilliant people, and you say, wow, is there an exact correlation? And there isn't. There
no.
is definitely not.
No. No, there absolutely isn't. So it's always fun. This is a great show. We get a lot of good feedback, and we're going to continue to bring that to you. So today we are going to, again, just to remind those that are just tuning in and then later on downloading and listening to the podcast, this is our series on growing your business. And so Jack is kind enough to come in. We usually try to do it weekly if we can, depending on our schedules, if not a couple times a month. The idea is to really bring you, the consumer or the listener, into the world of entrepreneurship and into now growing your business. And today, Jack, we're going to talk about what in relationship to that.
So I think of this as part three to our Automation of Life, that series or mini-series or episodes within the growing your company.
Speaking of Netflix.
Yeah, sort of the Netflix concept. And it's this notion that these various tools that bring to your fingertips and soon will bring to your wearable, whether it's in your ear or on your eyeglasses or in your hat or
embedded
helmet.
In your skin?
Yeah, whatever way they do it, whatever way that actually goes viral, one of them will eventually go viral. Yeah. where you're so wired into the Internet of Things,
mm-hmm.
and the question really is, if you're doing a startup and you get some traction in whatever your idea is, how do you fit into that ecosystem that is the Internet of Things, and then how do you make it work in a way that keeps it sticky to the user base? Because ultimately there are lots of things that sort of become a flash in the pan. They don't really become something people use over and over again. The thing I think about most is, for a while, there was this, you know, famous game called Pokemon
that
everyone was
right.
walking around the streets with maps, and they thought it was a way to end obesity and to get people to exercise, and people were scoring points, and there were definitely some people that were completely addicted to it. And they really believed that they were going to drive that into a continuously improving application for local shopping and local sightseeing. And I have to tell you, I haven't seen anyone recently playing that Pokemon game. It's almost like it it petered out, and then it sort of probably is on its way towards death. Now maybe the whole Pokemon community will start writing into us saying, you're crazy, man. It is so lit, and you're just missing how many people are still jumping on board. But I used to see people constantly, even in groups, meeting in front of locations that had a certain Pokemon event going on with it. And there was a lot of buzz and a lot of exchange about it, and I don't see that anymore. So that's an example of what I would say. You have to build something that then becomes very sticky in that ecosystem and maybe provides a real reward for how you're using your time. And maybe the rewards eventually have to even become very financial or the equivalent of financial. And the reason I weave this in is I see a lot of startups that have what I would call relatively futuristic, like things that you can't even imagine that will necessarily happen in the next 5 or 10 years. And then you're surprised to learn it does happen.
Yeah, right.
Or you're surprised to learn it happens a lot faster than you ever realized it would happen. And, you know, part of this is motivated by the Netflix story is one where they were doing a paper deliverable of a DVD, like literally trying to get people out of the, remember this, Blockbuster store?
Yeah.
The store that you went to basically rent a VHS
tape? Think about stay home and get your video. At the time when technology wasn't available,
there,
right?
There is actually still one remaining store in Oregon somewhere.
Is
like,
that right?
There is actually one remaining store where apparently, I guess, the Wi-Fi is not that good or fast enough. And
probably
people,
an historical
Yeah, it's a historical
whatever, right?
thing. It's a historical thing. And
right.
it was a great concept, but think about the overhead of running those stores.
Yeah.
Beyond the rent, beyond the electricity, beyond the people, just the infrastructure of keeping the shelves, like you have to have the shelves stocked.
Yeah, I mean, I it's the same thing. We could go round and round, but that's what's great about these shows. And I use the same example on a regular basis, as I know it's not going to change overnight, but look at the real estate industry. They have, just down just right here in this area, right here of Los Gatos, there's 3 or 4 offices, Jack, with probably 30 to 40,000 square feet of space.
Yes.
Right? Of space. And yet, less than 10% of their agents do 100% of the business.
And they're mostly working from
home. And most of these buildings are empty.
Yes.
And so, again, not like a video, but similar. The point is, once majority of activity moves online, see, the consumer doesn't any longer have to go to the office, sit down, look at the big screen in the real estate office, because guess what? The consumer, in most cases, knows more than the real estate agent before they meet
them. Yes, yes.
So, I mean, the idea of an office... EXP Real Estate is one of the leaders in that. They're going all virtual. They have no offices. They're offering stock to their employees and doing some other interesting things. So this dynamic where the change in how we do business and the consumer acceptable, I mean, it's amazing that how quick things are changing.
Well, this is a very famous concept. I'll bring back some ideas from business school many decades ago for me. This notion of creative destruction, which is... There is, in the course of human evolution and technology improvement, a natural order of destruction that happens to existing obsolete ideas. Let's even call them at the level of ideas. So if we had some younger people on the show, they would say, why are you even talking about Ford Motor Company or even Tesla for that matter?
Right.
They would say that is basically the concept of mobility, and mobility will not involve ownership or a lease of a car. Mm-hmm. It will not even involve rental of a car. It is having a fingertip service to pick you up with something that moves. It might be a scooter, it might be a bicycle, it might be something else, to get you from point A to point B. And that's all it is. And no one's going to want the hassle of, you know, registering the car, licensing the car, getting the insurance on the car, getting
liability,
it clean, getting the oil changed. Like, even today as I was driving over, I was driving a different car because it's a long story. I won't even get into it. But, of course, I get in the car and the light goes off. I seem to have tire problems all over the place. And this is not a Tesla. It's a Lexus.
You know, good luck.
Yeah, I said to myself, my goodness, I should just get on a bicycle with him. I was thinking of the very show we held, the previous show, talking about bicycling with an Uber. If it weren't raining out here, I would have done that and think, you know, that's the future. That's mobility.
Yeah.
And that's where the evolution creates this destruction that's viewed as a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, if you're caught in this sort of mix where you are heavy invested in the assets of the old order that is getting destroyed, then you're going to get swept up in that destruction. So you've got to accept the fact that you're going to get swept up in that destruction, and you have to live with the fact that you're swept up in that destruction.
Yeah.
And I think about this, and I think about it's happening faster and faster.
It is.
So this notion of an Internet of Things means lots of deliverables happen faster and faster with no physical delivery.
Mm.
So you deliver Bundle Select. It's very intangible. It's an app.
Right.
It's on the web. It's on your phone. You press a button. All of a sudden, you've got concierge-like activity going on. That is an instantaneous way to get help.
Right.
Right? There's no, like, come to our office. We'll sit down with you. Yeah. We'll interview you. We'll do this. We'll do that. It's more like you're connected with us, and, you know, think about how this goes, because I've been pitched some apps recently, and some of them I wonder, will they see the light of day, and others I think maybe it has traction. We want access to all of your accounts on a confidential basis, because we'll percolate all that data up through analysis and AI, and tell you whether your mix of investments is reasonable or is risky. So think about it, and there's a few of them. One of them that's on the market for a while is called Personal Capital. There's another one called Wealthfront. There's like dozens of them, and more they're getting sort of absorbed by the larger players like the Charles Schwabs and the others of the world. Schwabs just announced
it's going to
buy TD Ameritrade.
Yeah.
It's a pretty amazing
$25 billion,
many billion-dollar deal.
Yeah.
Right? You know, what is it? It's an information system.
Yeah, right.
They have offices, sort of, but the offices are mostly empty.
Yeah.
They're sort of places for the agents to work, but most of the agents do all their work
on the
computer.
I'm not mistaken, the whole reason for that is really the competitive nature of the low-cost transactions, correct?
Yes. So conceptually, when you look at this idea of you've got to fit in and you've got to be able to really deliver a lot of value very quickly, and then you got to do it in a way that keeps the customer coming back again and again when things are accelerating rapidly.
Yeah.
So you've also got to sort of recognize that things are accelerating while you're playing this game that seems to be fast already.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's going to get faster and faster. So it's obviously something that you have to anticipate. You better be improving whatever you're doing better and better, which means you got to be listening intently to the customers that matter and somehow screening out the customers that don't matter, the 80-20 rule that you mentioned, and do it in some ways with talent that is able to implement those ideas, and then you got to retain and hold on to that talent and hope they don't go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of moving parts to making all this go. And so whenever I talk to, you know, startups that are sort of in the growth phase, I said the startup part is actually relatively easy.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's the growth part and then having the conviction of your principles that this is going to work, this is not going to fail. What is the title of that guy's book? I think it's This is not going to work, I think, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the title?
Yeah, this is not going to work, yeah, or it won't work,
it
or
won't
something
work.
Like that.
Yeah, so, like, you know, he keeps throwing out ideas to, you know, Reed Hastings about, here's another idea, you know, customized surfboards.
Right.
Da, da, da.
Right.
And Reed's like, forget it, that's crazy, it's not going to work. And they go over all the reasons why it won't, and then
yeah,
they eliminate a lot of garbage. But this idea of an Internet of Things leads to the various things that you're the Internet of Things on has to work so seamlessly and so securely. Because
mm-hmm,
look at what happened to these speakers that seemed to be starting to take off, and then all of a sudden a bunch of security lapses made people
mm-hmm
all scared.
Mm-hmm.
And I know at least a dozen people that really believed in the Alexa / Siri / Cortana, there's so many
right,
different versions
right
of these voice assistants,
mm-hmm,
who just unplugged all their devices because
yeah
they said it's spooky.
Yeah,
it's getting too spooky. They're listening to everything. I don't want to do that. And what a setback that was to the actual evolution of those speakers, because had those speakers been really secure, I think you would have seen more people start to rely on them for things like updates about take your medication,
mm-hmm,
do this, do that, you know, make good suggestions,
right,
you know, good
right
sort of mentorship, coaching suggestions. And I think we've had a setback
yeah
from that point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. You could even use it for your personal assistant, so to speak, if it's programmed in the right way and they have access to your calendar.
Absolutely.
Right?
They have access to your calendar.
I mean, it's one thing then you get a calendar from Outlook and it goes bing, bing, and it
yes
tells you you got a meeting in 15 minutes.
Yes.
It's another thing when a voice comes in or you get a text.
Yes.
That says, you know, so-and-so is on his way to the meeting.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if it's improving over time so it can do smart things automatically,
mm-hmm,
like, hey, you haven't had a dental appointment
right
in 6 months, we're going to get that scheduled.
Let us give you a call. Yeah.
This idea of agency, this idea
mm-hmm
that you can delegate things that can be delegated, so you focus on things that really require your attention. So in the law biz, just to bring this back to reality, we like to say, if a lawyer is doing, and this sounds like a lot, but it's not, big firms will laugh, they hear this 2,000 billable hours,
mm-hmm,
meaning 2,000 hours that are logged into
mm-hmm
different clients and different projects, the odds are, unfortunately, that we're not really getting more than 50% of what I would call the best intellect during that 2,000 hours.
I
That's
see
bad.
I see.
That needs to change.
So less than 50%.
That's like a productivity
wow
element, because
yeah
unfortunately, there's distractions, there's what might be called opposing counsel getting in the way or getting overzealous or doing stuff that creates challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, insurance companies capture a lot of this data,
mm,
as do various other companies that are sort of watching what lawyers and other knowledge
mm-hmm
workers do.
Mm-hmm.
And in an Internet of Things world, where that data is automatically paid attention,
mm-hmm,
you might get a report at the end of the day like, congratulations, Joe, you've had a really productive day. You've done 26 calls. You sent out 150 emails.
Right.
And we got to get to quality, too. And you did 3 podcasts.
Right.
And your brain was really firing on all
mm-hmm
cylinders, because we have an ability to check
yeah
that out with a wearable. And
yeah
it gets sort of at this level of you are like a racehorse.
Yeah.
And the racehorse is being watched
yeah
carefully.
You burned 120 calories and your cholesterol's down.
But you shouldn't have had that extra dessert at lunch. That was a mistake. No, but at some level,
yeah, right,
it does become
right
like that. I mean,
yeah,
look at the way in which, even if you want to talk about racehorses as an analogy, racehorses get bred for
yeah
their performance.
That's true.
And they are very much watched on, like, on the clock.
Mm-hmm.
And that has become such a, you know, I don't know if you call it a business or a profession or
mm-hmm
a mix of both, but we haven't really done that as such to the knowledge
mm
workers of the world, even though people talk about teams that do really well have a certain level of trust with each other
mm-hmm
and the culture that's set works so well with the technology that they choose to deploy
mm
in the work group, whether
okay
it's, you know, Microsoft or Google or whatever
right
it is.
Right.
And they all know how to use it, and they all know how to use it well, and
mm-hmm
they all make it work very effectively.
Yeah.
When teams are performing well, the whole is much larger than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
It becomes like a multiplier.
Mm-hmm.
So in the world of the Internet of Things, where multiple things are measuring and monitoring and paying attention to and arguably even somewhat managing various people in the work group, you have to imagine there's going to be a much more intense feedback on a daily basis to how did you do today?
Right.
How did things go today?
Right.
What did you achieve on your system of goals? And then what did you achieve for your own career trajectory? Mm-hmm. And what I keep saying is it's going to get harder and harder to fit various things into that ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people have to be thinking about.
They do.
So like what you do with Bundle Select and saving people time and frustration and money, that's the beginning. I mean, that's the very
that's the beginning.
That's where, and then you have to imagine what...
We were just talking about kind of phase one, right?
Yeah, what gets added? What gets added to that?
Right. And that's a good point. Well, we're going to have to wrap things up, but before we go, it's another good topic, and next week we'll be back talking about this again, Thursday, if you're still in town, but before
That's Thursday after Thanksgiving, so we've got to wish everyone happy Thanksgiving.
That's right, happy Thanksgiving to those that are viewing and downloading the podcast. It's amazing. We're already almost through 2019, and there's a lot of fun activity
Let
happening.
Let me tell you a story on that before we go, because I think it's noteworthy for this Thanksgiving. A lot of people don't know that the way in which the United States adopted the third, what is it, the last Thursday of the month?
Mm-hmm.
So the last Thursday
Last
Thursday of each November as Thanksgiving was a presidential proclamation by Abraham Lincoln in 1863. Why? Because we were in the middle of the Civil War.
Okay.
And he wanted to unify North and South and hope to somehow get the Civil War to end early by signing a presidential proclamation that said, we're taking the day off, like no battles, no war for one day. I mean, can you imagine? No white flags, but no war for one day. And guys, gals, everyone, let's just have a day of peace and Thanksgiving that we're all alive and, you know, we haven't completely annihilated each other. And I think he had the right intention. Mm. So I said recently in some media, I think it was in a little article I wrote on LinkedIn, that if I were president, that's never going to happen, but if I could imagine supporting a president, if I could imagine one of the candidates for president saying, look, one of the very first things I'm going to do, and it's going to sound crazy, but I think it's going to unify this country, is I'm going to declare that we're going to have two Thanksgivings. We're going to have a November Thanksgiving, and then we're going to have a Thanksgiving right after the taxes are due, like April 15th, or maybe it should be April 15th. Maybe it should be April 15th of each year. Why? Because I want you, when you send that tax return in, to take the day off, and maybe that should be actually Election Day, should be April 15th as well. And I want you to be thankful for everything that this country has done for you, hopefully with that Jack Kennedy notion.
Right.
Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for the country. And bring this mentality into twice a year, because what I noticed this time of year, people are like happy and positive about things. They look forward to Thanksgiving. It's not been completely ruined by advertising.
Yeah, and I think Thanksgiving is a lot less stressful than Christmas, right?
Yes, because there's no gifts.
No pressure.
There's a lot of eating.
Yeah,
there's a lot of drinking. There's a lot of partying.
Yeah.
But people, you know, if you think about what Abe Lincoln tried to do, and we're still trying to do it 100 and nearly 150-something years later, right? 156 years later, soon enough it'll be 160 years later, we have not yet unified this country.
Yeah.
And if anything, I think the next leader, whoever it is, has to imagine saying, I'm going to unify the country and do something that's symbolic and lasting.
Right. Yeah.
Yes, it's going to give an extra day off. Maybe employers are going to be upset about that. Maybe it gets debited against vacation.
Mm-hmm.
But conceptually, it sets up a second family/friends holiday. I think it'd be the most brilliant thing that would ever come out
that's
of the
a
next
good idea.
Election.
And
right?
I think we make the next president, we make Alexa the next president, right?
Well, something. And maybe there should be an Alexa app where
a robot president.
There should be an app that you can dial in and say, you know, to whoever is the robotic president of the United States, why don't this get fixed or that get fixed?
Absolutely. All right, we got to go. Jack, remind everybody real quick where they could reach you.
Sure. It's Jack Russo, managing partner, Computer Law Group. We're in Palo Alto in San Francisco. We do take phone calls, 650-327-9800. By email, of course, is jrusso, J-R-U-S-S-O, at computerlaw.com. And we have a website that has all that contact information. We actually do have folks come in. We visit them in person. We're not totally, virtual yet, although some people say that's the future. We still believe very much it's all about trust and the speed of trust and a long-term relationship. So we look forward to helping you.
Absolutely. Well, good. You have a nice Thanksgiving, too,
yes,
Jack.
Too.
And
you
those
too,
that are
Joe.
Viewing the show and later downloading, thank you for continuing to support the show, listen to the show, watch the show, and have a wonderful, happy, safe Thanksgiving. We'll see you next week. Take care.
You've been listening to Real Estate Radio Live. For more information on today's program, visit reradiolive.com. That's reradiolive.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Discover more at reradiolive.com.